This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today. It is episode 229. I think my notes say 228, but they're lying to me because those were the notes I was bringing last week, and last week I left them at home. So we're actually going to be to episode 230 here before too long, and then we're going to be to episode 240, and then 250, and then before you know it, we are going to be at episode, what would it be, 260, which would be 5 years. 5 years worth of podcast, because I don't know when to quit. That's all that proves. I don't know when to quit. But I mean, I'm 4.5 years now. I don't know. Anyways, so there you go. It has been absolutely gorgeous here this week. I mean, we've had like San Diego weather. Really had spectacular weather this week. And so it's been, you know, beautiful during the days. It's been beautiful in the evenings. So I really haven't had much of a challenge thinking about getting the air conditioning fixed in my car. And now we are in the middle of August, so I'm on the downhill side of it now. I mean, it's a little warm in the car today, but that's just because the windows were rolled up and I should have aired out the car before I got started. But hey, it's much better than it was several weeks ago when it was hot. I do have to take a quick little side trip. My beloved is actually working at the church and she's at the office, so I'm going to run in real quick, give her a kiss, hug, then I will be heading home. So I will be stopping here in a moment. Still writing. I'm still not finished with Amanda and the cog-shifting imp. Although it's coming together. It's coming together. I just haven't got the rest of it wrapped up on the end, but yeah, I was working on one part earlier this week, and I got it written, and then I looked at it, and I thought, not quite right, and so I went back and sort of changed the perspective a little bit, and I like it better, and it gave me a chance to do something thematically with control and blame and all those things that I had touched earlier, and so that tied together nicely. And so now I just have to get the thing landed, you know. And seeing as I'm already up to 275 pages. I'd really like to get this thing landed in the next 25 pages, but I'm not sure I'm going to at this point. I still have more story to tell. So we'll see. We'll see. It will be fine. Anyways, I had a lot of nice meetings with friends this week. Had some good discussions, and that's always enjoyable. My godson is actually back from California, and we got together for breakfast. It's always, always interesting to hear his tales of the Los Angeles, the LA life. It's always fascinating because there are ways to make money in LA that you just wouldn't think of. So anyways, so it's just fun to, you know, talk to him. And okay, I'm at the church and I'm going to give my beloved a call real quick here. And then we'll go from there. Okay, mission accomplished. Got my kiss on my way home. So anyways, there's just a fascinating number of ways to make money in the world. And a fascinating number of ways to make money in Los Angeles. So, for instance, at this point, my godson, who was a nice-looking young man, I mean, he's a very nice-looking young man, had a situation where there was something, I should know what it is and I don't, there was something where he sang or on something, and it ended up, it was on a movie, and so he got a credit, and since he got a credit on a movie, then he could join the Screen Actors Guild, which is a lot of money to do, but you get paid much better, and so he's in the union now, he's in the Screen Actors Guild, and he said, you know, some people work years to get into the Screen Actors Guild, and he hadn't been out there for very long, and managed to get that done, and so he, I guess, was in, there was a TV show called Twisted, and he was one of the background actors. So he said, it's kind of fun. He said, you know, he said, you just pretend that you're talking to people in the background, and, you know, sometimes you high-five them, and sometimes you play games, and he said, sometimes, he said, they're long days, they're like 12 hours, but you basically just do what they tell you to do, walk around, sit around, whatever, you're just in the background, and since he's a part of SAG, he gets SAG wages, and he said they feed you, so, you know, this is not a bad gig, and one of the guys that he was talking to had suggested that he get involved with a certain agency there that really takes care of their people, and so he's going to get, you know, signed up with that agency, and then he's going to see if he can get a little work walking around in the background of TV shows. So I've told him absolutely yes. You know, make sure that you write me when you're going to be on a TV show and I'll go look it up. So he's going to do that. I think he's here just for a couple of more weeks. We're going to try to get together again while he's here. And then he's heading back to California again. So it was fun to see him. Fun to hear the news. That's pretty much everything. Had a nice breakfast with a friend on Tuesday. Had a nice breakfast this morning with a friend. And that's pretty much the news from Lake Wobegon. Everything's puttering along. The grandkids are growing. My granddaughter is getting ready to start preschool. So that should be an interesting experience. Because she kind of has her own opinion as to what life should be and what life should be like. And so it's going to be interesting to see how preschool and life conflict with her idea of what life should be like. So fun times ahead. This will be amusing. Last week, I was going to talk about this, and I think I mentioned it, but I left my notes at home. So I came across this article that was very interesting, and the title of the article was "Key to a High IQ? Not Getting Distracted." And I'll tell you why in a little bit that I thought, oh, that's very interesting. Because for as long as I have answered the question or responded to the accusation, I've had the same response. And the accusation on occasion has been that I am a, quote, genius, unquote. I have, in fact, taken some IQ tests, and I happen to be the type of person who tests well on IQ tests. But I've never been particularly fond of the title genius, because I've told people that it doesn't really feel like that on the inside. And when I saw the title of this article, I thought, yeah, that makes sense to me. And so I started reading through the article, and I thought, well, you know, this is pretty interesting. So there's been this new study that intelligence is more about what the brain chooses to ignore than simply the ability to process information rapidly. And here's how they came to that. There was a professor at the University of Rochester. I will attempt his name, but I'm not going to get it. Duje Tadin. And he had like 67 people that were in this study. Before these people started the study, he gave them IQ tests. Some of them got
a short form. Excuse me.
A short form IQ test. Some of them did a full-blown long form IQ test. So after he had all these IQ tests, then what they did is they set them down in front of a screen and had them watch videos of small objects versus large objects. And they were supposed to tell when a small object moved or when a larger object moved. It is already a known fact that telling when a larger object moves is more challenging. And the theory is that's more challenging because in the natural world, large background movements, like trees rustling in the wind, they are typically ignored by humans. Humans learn to ignore them quickly. And the reason is, according to this researcher, is he said, what you want to see is if there's an animal hiding in a tree about to jump you. So you want to see the small movements overseeing the larger movements. So they sat these people down, they had done IQ tests on them, and then they showed them videos of large objects moving and small objects moving, and then they graded the performance of these individuals based on how good they were at seeing the larger objects move versus the smaller objects. This is where it gets interesting. And I'll just read the quote from this guy. He said, the more they, the test subjects, struggled with the big ones, and the better they were with the small ones, the better their IQ was. In other words, this is a quote from the article, intelligence may require a trade-off between being good at identifying motion in small objects at the cost of not being able to do so with large objects. And Tadin and his associates called the measure of this skill the suppression index. And by suppression, they mean, can you suppress information that you consider to be trivial and not important? That's the suppression index. Now, what was interesting is there was a definite corollary that the ability to inhibit irrelevant or distracting information on low levels is directly correlated with higher level functions. So one of the claims that Tadin makes that this shows is that for intelligence, you need the ability to process relevant information fast, but you also need to be able to focus on the most relevant information and filter out what is irrelevant information. And this actually might explain some things with autism. Why people with autism have such difficulty. It's not that they may not be intelligent in terms of being able to process information, but it may be that they are easily distracted. In previous research, this same professor examined sensory perception in autistic people and found that autistic children were twice as effective in detecting motion in... I'm turning a corner, one moment. They were twice as effective in detecting motion in high contrast objects as typically developing kids. And so they're thinking, okay, well, maybe that heightened sensitivity they have will explain why autistic people frequently find themselves overwhelmed by strong sensory experiences like bright lights and loud noises that most of us register but we disregard. Okay, so that's pretty interesting. In addition, there's some things they don't quite understand about this. Because the article was talking about the fact that while it makes sense for the suppression index to be strongly correlated with visual and spatial aspects of IQ, the measure actually showed a tighter connection to verbal intelligence. And that they're not sure why. Because while the verbal intelligence shows the strongest association to overall score, it's not readily apparent why someone with a good suppression index would have a higher degree of verbal intelligence. So obviously, they're looking to more research to kind of try to figure out why that is. So, you know, this is just a preliminary study, and they're going to do more research, but they're saying this could be quite interesting if, in fact, the connection to our world and how we manage that connection, how we manage the distractions, how we absorb information is just as important as how we process information. It could certainly have some cascading effects. For instance, if distraction causes us to function at a lower intellectual level, what do we say about our world in developed countries now? What do we say about environments where we have so many digital influences that are nearly constantly keeping us distracted? Tadeen commented on this when he said, it's getting worse and worse, Tadeen said, of technology that surrounds us and divides our attention. To maintain our intelligence, he adds, we need to filter out some of this stuff. Okay, well, this actually was pretty interesting. but getting back to what I started to talk about in the beginning, when I have been accused of being intelligent, when I have been accused of being a genius, my response has always been, you know, it really doesn't feel like that on the inside. It just feels like I'm having these flashes of insight. I'm getting my mail. One moment. Hey, got a little note from our missionary couple who stayed with us. Oh no.
Did I park? Did I park too close? Oh, come on. You can do it. You can do it. You can do it. No. No. Wait. There's hope. Ah. Yay. Okay.
I thought I parked just slightly too close to be able to get a box out of the mailbox, but I was triumphant. Anyways. Oh, yes. Accused of being a genius, accused of being intelligent. I always tell people, you know, it doesn't feel like that on the inside. It feels like I'm having these flashes of insight that are coming from somewhere, and I don't know where they're coming from. There is not an answer, and then suddenly there is an answer. And a lot of that I have attributed and chalked up to God's whispers in my life. And a lot of that I have attributed, backing into my garage, a lot of that I have attributed simply to the fact I had the wonder and the good fortune to grow up in a home where there was a constant expectation of God's ability to speak and to communicate, and of God's willingness to help. And since there was this constant appreciation of that, and since there was this constant acknowledgement of that and expectation of that, I think I learned early on to live that way. Now, my dad, he would always say, well, God doesn't talk to me like he talks to your mother. But with my mom, she was always expecting that she was going to get an answer. And so even young, when I was younger, when I had these flashes of insight, I'd just figure, oh, well, that's just God talking to me and it's fine. And then when people come along later and they say, oh, you're intelligent, oh, you're a genius, blah, 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 you know, then I just think, well, I'm basically just listening. But the connection to this is I've made a habit for as long as I can remember of trying to live a life that quiets the noise, that quiets the distractions. And I'm all for accepting information and the information path that's coming in. But I don't just want something in the background making noise, you know, like a TV that I'm not watching, or multiple streams of information when I'm trying to work. Sometimes I listen to music when I'm working, if I'm working on something that's fairly brainless. But if I'm trying to get something figured out, the first thing I do is I shut down all the distractions. And if I'm in a place where that's difficult, what I do is I put on my little headphones and I put on processed brown noise. You know. And I turn it up enough to where I can't hear anything else. And then I just sit down and get to work and get really focused. And so I don't know all the ins and outs. I'm not sure. I know we all have genetic legacies. I know we all win different parts of the genetic lottery. And I know I've had some really blessed upbringing. But there's a lot of pieces of this article that make sense to me. That in fact, what's going on in my brain is that maybe there aren't as many distractions. That maybe there isn't as much worry and concern. You know, there's not as much anger. There's not much, all those things that can kind of cloud up what you're hearing. So I don't know. It's kind of an interesting thing. And I'm going to kind of be watching out for more information about this, because it's really fascinating. The prospect is fascinating that intelligence is not only your ability to process information quickly, but it's the ability to screen out information quickly as well, and the ability to decide what information should be screened out. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.